Sports Show presents House of Rugby.
Hello, and you're all very welcome to House of Rugby. My name is Maura Thrasnigul, and joining me in studio this week are Lindsay Peat and Johnny Murphy. What a weekend of Six Nations action. Heartache for Ireland, of course, but Andy Farrell's men are still in pole position to claim the championship. Lindsay, Johnny, how are we both doing? Johnny, you were playing the Legends game on Friday. How's the body after that?
Still struggling a bit, to be honest. I don't know whether that's self-inflicted or because of the game, but yeah, it was great fun. For someone like me, I went over there, was what, 10 or 11 Leicester lads playing, so it was great to catch up with old friends, and then guys like Danny Barnes and Billy Holland and those guys that I would have played in Munster with. So yeah, it was a good weekend, but this is a slow week, I can say.
Still a bit dehydrated, I'd imagine.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, all for two great charities, and yeah, worth putting your body through that once a year just for the fun of it all.
Did you do much prep in the build up?
No. I ran around with the club side on Thursday night for about 10 minutes in skills, just to make sure that I could actually still catch a ball, and that was about it. So yeah, very, very underprepared, but it was good fun.
Looking back at the game on Saturday, Lindsay, this one still hurts, doesn't it? It feels like the quarterfinal defeat again. How are you feeling a few days on?
I'm probably still angry. I'm angry because, not because of the loss, really, because we didn't, when we did decide to put phases together, like, you know, we did get tries out of them, but it was just too few and far between those moments for Ireland. We were very out of character, out of sync, and I have to give it to England. We spoke about them being a potential banana skin. If everything that they were trying to do and had spoken about clicked, they were going to be a very dangerous outfit. And I think finally we saw this attack that they're looking to play. I was very, very impressed with how they kept the ball alive, their running lines, their support lines. And really, as much as I'm angry, I think it would be a very unfair result, which kills me to say, if England didn't come out on the winning side, because they certainly were the team who played all the rugby.
Yeah, that's it. In England, we're underdogs going into this game. Now, the Grand Slam dream is over for Ireland, and we're feeling very hurt by that. But as Lindsay said, it would have been robbery, really, if Ireland had won in the end, because across the 80 minutes, England were fierce, and they really put it up to Ireland in the physical stakes from the very first minute.
And I think they probably, you know, we saw a glimpse of how they wanted to play in that Scotland game in the first kind of 10-15 minutes. On Saturday, unfortunately for us, they put an 80-minute performance together. Huge amount of emotional drivers in it, obviously, with, you know, Jamie George, you know, his first home international since his mother passed away, Danny Kerr, and then, you know, was alluded to in a number of interviews after and press conferences about what was being said about them in the press. And, you know, they used that and they really did stand up. You know, their selection with the likes of kind of, you know, George Martin, who's a mountain of a man, and then Chesham at six kind of allowed them to go after their line out a bit more. And physically they were on it. They were on the edge. You know, a lot of people, even though they don't like using the word violence, but they were, in most collisions, they were really violent in that area, and they pushed the boundaries and they kept pushing it. And they were good value for it. I think the most frustrating thing from an Irish perspective is that, you know, we get 2 points up with, you know, 2 minutes to go and we can't close the game out. I think that's, and there's a number of factors associated as to why that happened, but I think that's probably the biggest frustration, that, you know, really great sides win when they don't play that well. And Ireland had the opportunity to do that on Saturday, but they just didn't close it out.
Is this a problem, looking at the bigger picture, that Ireland are underperforming in these big, high-pressure games?
Well, yeah, to build on Johnny's point there, like, England actually threw that away just before we had the opportunity and won the ball back out. Like, Danny Kerr put in a little grubber and you're like, well, you just had a line break from Marcus Smith. Why the hell would you do that? You're actually now in our 22. And this was a stat that fascinated me. Out of the two teams out of the championship, the highest entries into the 22 were both Ireland and England. However, Ireland's return from visits to the 22 and the opposition brought lots of tries, whereas England were actually not scoring from their visits. So, like, that was the naivety of England. And I thought then, you know, when they took that shot with Ireland's indiscipline again, they kind of threw the game away. So, yeah, it was a time for us to, like, not play well, but, like, manage the game, that it wasn't our responsibility now. We'd gotten out of jail. And when we put phase together and took the opportunities, we were good for that lead at that time. But then I just do not get the box kick. Like at that moment, we were actually down in Ballingolic and we're in their dress, in their, excuse me, their clubhouse. And I'm roaring at Teddy going, no, because like I'm not a back, but I'm like, why not just put the ball up your jumper? This is the time now we really slow it down, go through your phases and just wait till 80 minutes and kick the ball out. Now, it's easy for me to say, but actually that was a consistent theme for Ireland, that every time that there was big decisions to be made, we faltered under the pressure. Like really quick passes into this just killer channel or killer running line, and we turn the ball over. Ill discipline at times. And actually when we slow the ball down and put phase together, we made England, very few times now, but we made them look mediocre. Do you know, when we were able to get it out wide and score good tries, but they were easy enough tries once we put phases together, but we just didn't do that initially. And I think, yes, for me, it comes down to you can't replicate that pressure in training. So then when it comes to test games, where is the plan? Like, where is the game plan? I know nothing really went our way. I mean, two HIAs that, you know, both Calvin Ash and Frawley failed. But like, I thought Gibson Park actually was one of the standout players, especially when he went to the wing. Like his catches under the high ball when he was under pressure was exemplary, to be honest. So we did have moments where we should have just got ourselves over the line, to be honest.
Well, talking about those final moments again, Johnny, what should and could have Ireland done differently? Do you agree with Lindsay that they shouldn't have taken the box kick, or how would you play out those final moments?
I think, in my opinion, I think you're going to struggle to play out for 2 minutes there because the referees are really hot on side entry or anything, and you're only 2 points up. I think the kick is okay, but I don't, for me, I think the maul is the start off. You know, the line out had steadied itself when Kelleher came on. You know, Henderson obviously had come on and the calls had been good, and we were 100% when Kelleher was on the pitch. I think a big thing there is why not maul and see what happens then, try and eke out a penalty. Or just control the clock a bit more. But playing off the tail, you know, that was a bit of I didn't understand that. So obviously Doris is at nine, he goes up, but then Baird plays to Conan in the middle of the park. You're in your own 22. Don't understand why they would have played that. And then when you get inside the 15, don't really want to be box kicking there. You probably can go back to your 10, who's got a bit more of an angle, a bit more time on the ball. I know you're back 10 metres, but you'd hope from that area, Crowley can land the ball on the halfway. Or you run kick to Lowe's left foot. But for me, I think, why not maul the ball there? Try and get a penalty, but you're controlling the clock. You have probably 10, 15, 20 seconds, then make decisions off that. That was the kind of thing for me. I think the kick, I personally think you have to kick the ball there, just the way the referees are at the moment. They know you're going to be closing.
Was it a collective decision to do that? Did that come from the box?
It's a phase call, you know, that is being called by your 10 there, you know, in the setup. The line out is called. It's a five-man, 5+1 line out where Doris goes into lift when the ball is in the air. They play to the middle of the park. Well, they play inside the 15. It's not really correct use of your angles there, and they didn't even really have that long a ruck either to give Murray an opportunity to take another step and go further. And then the collective D off that maul, off that line out on the 10 metre, within two phases, they're on our 5 metre line. Like that's something that they're going to dissect and look at. I don't think that's not good enough and not what you expect from an Irish side in terms of where their D has been for the duration of this tournament. I think that's
what do you put that down to? Is that fatigue at that point in the game?
Yeah, well, talking to some guys that were at it and and looking at different kind of reviews of it, they seemingly the view from people who were on ground level there was that they looked a small bit, you know, gassed at that stage. And that, you know, even in their kick chase was off. Their discipline again was in the second half was off again. That can be down to fatigue or just because of the intensity of the game that has been played at such a high pace that they were just struggling to get their lungs in gear. That's from people that were at the match, but it's very hard to gaze at when you're looking at it on TV.
Yeah, the loose kicks, the handling errors, the missed tackles. We're not used to seeing these from Ireland. Do you credit England for that pressure, or was it an underperformance from a lot of our players?
Just to on the back of that point, I don't think the one moment, by the way, of the box kick of Conor Murray was more so of winning it, but I think he'd had put up a couple of box kicks that had put us under pressure. And I think one thing England did well, because there's not a lot of territory, and John makes a great point, rule of thumb, you would line out Maul, you would try and get a bit of gain line, and then you're making good angles for either one hit up and a better angle, for, depending on the what foot your kicker is. But what England did very well off our kicks was just their attacking line off it. They just picked gaps. They were able to gain momentum. And to be honest, I think it was 34 minutes gone and Ireland had 10 missed tackles, probably in the run up to that championship. It's just not something we're used to. So the fact that England were winning gain line, they were picking soft shoulders. They were like, I thought Bernard Earls was absolutely unbelievable. He grabbed England by the scruff of the neck when he thought, oh, Ireland are finally, after turning a corner, do you know, our like third and fourth quarters of games are a really strong point. And you know, it's 44 minutes gone and we're finally, you know, after going ahead. So he just dragged them back in. So they were just brilliant in everything they did, and they were probably unlucky with a couple of turnovers actually against us. They were penalised for a midfield turnover, which I actually thought was legit. So they just had their homework done on us, but nobody stood up for us. I felt like, I thought Bundy stood out, Gibson Park stood out, but again, actually one thing that was really mind blown was the speed of ruck from England. Alex Mitchell was absolutely excellent in the first half. Other than the first 3 minutes, England took over then, and they looked like the Irish team who'd been playing up to that championship. So we were just very much out of sorts. We didn't know how to respond to a lot of pressure. We didn't negate that line speed that actually England brought. Now, there was times where we made excellent decisions from our tries, where, you know, there was a shooter from the line. We held onto the ball. We attacked that space that was created, and then we were able to create like an overlap, whether it be a 3-on-2 or a 4-on-3. So there was times we were glimpses of excellence, but yeah, missed tackles, losing the gain line. They'd certainly given away a couple of scrum penalties at key times, and they certainly targeted our line out, and they were just more physical and... As I said, they look like the team that brought the energy and the hunger, unfortunately.
I think one thing on what you said around the counter-attack is, like, when you analyse the game, the centres work rate.
Excellent, weren't they?
Unbelievable when the kick went in. And, you know, the fundamental thing around kick receipt and counter attack is the people off the ball are probably more responsible than the people on the ball. So it was very clear that all the, you know, there's the kick receipt, the guy who's receiving the kick, all he had to do was worry about collecting the ball. All the work rate and the communication off the ball there was off the charts for England. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, that doesn't cost, like, That's not talent. That's a talentless task. It's just work rate, back into position, communicating when you're under duress and your lungs are screaming at you.
So why didn't we see that work rate that we're used to seeing from Ireland on Saturday?
Well, I just think you have to credit England for the amount of pressure that they put on, how they started, you know, and then Ireland, you know, despite all that, they still got themselves in a position to win the game. You know, so they did claw their way back into it. But, you know, I think, again, I have to credit a lot to Felix. We've spoken about him before. Like, there was probably no better coach in the world to have on the sideline at the weekend, because since the World Cup draw, Felix has been reviewing Ireland every game. Like, he must have hours and hours and hours of data and footage on them. So, like, he has a clear blueprint of how, you know, Ireland, you know, can struggle or what areas you want to go after. And he brought that wealth of knowledge with, you know, to the whole team this weekend. But yeah, it was just, they were just on it, you know, they really, really were. And there was a lot of things, like, the people that were there said the atmosphere was incredible. You know, a couple of weeks ago they were being booed. Like, so, you know, there's all these little things that are just massive energy drivers that when you're tired, you can, like, the atmosphere will drive you on more. You'll forget about your lung burning, where it's very hard when you're under pressure and you're under, you know, physical duress, that when the crowd is on top of you as well, there's very little driver that you can take from that to get on. But yeah, England were just very good.
Even the yellow card. That was a huge sign of pressure. Yeah. We actually didn't need to get off our feet, you know.
Yeah.
O'Mahony, and it just happened to be O'Mahony. He did a great job in getting back for that break off Earls, got over, but then just sealed the ruck. And of course it was cynical because England were on the front foot.
Yeah.
So it was just like every moment we were put under pressure, our decision making at times, at key times, just succumbed to that pressure. And it was like no one had an answer. And you can understand some players having that an off day because it's a very pressurised environment. They're very like the French now, the English. They can really create that atmosphere when things are going well for them. But like, it was very unusual for a team to have nobody really stand up other than, as I said, really Bundy. Like no one else kind of stood up. They were just silly, uncharacteristic errors. And again, it's just pressure. And when you're like, when you're being attacked in such a violent way, you're physically then absolutely being put on your ass, being put on your back foot. So the brain just doesn't work under pressure then, you know, because you're so fatigued.
Fans and pundits, Irish and across the water, were very confident of an Irish win going into that. Could there have been a bit of arrogance, and could have that have seeped into the players' mindset as well heading into this game? Because you're saying that all the players were a bit off. There were mental lapses.
There were mental lapses, but you never know. Like a test game is different to every test match is different. The opposition is different. The environment is different. The stat going into that is no Irish team or English team had won consecutively on four occasions. They'd only ever reached three. So nothing was, you know, now stats are stats and they're there to be broken, but it's very unusual. And I suppose considering the form and how Ireland were in, and they were very, very clinical in all the performances, though not really probably foreign at 100%, they still on paper, and I still would, you know, they should have won that game. They could have won that game with, and even not, they were probably at 50% if even. So no, I think, look, all those handling errors, like I think there was 24 handling errors. I'm open for question on that in the Scotland game alone. Like, so any team coming off the back of that where they are creating chances but they're not making them, and they're uncharacteristic errors, or they're actually basic errors for professional players, you're like, they're just not sinking here. And that could have been easy England again if we had to put them under pressure. But I thought their running lines, as I said, even for the Furbank try, just I told you how quickly his hands was. It's been a long time since we saw the mobile, skillful Mario Itoje, you know, able to kind of showcase exactly what he can do. And we were waiting, you know, there was a lot of chat even from this show here, you know, we were waiting for England to just really back up what they said, and unfortunately it came at the wrong time for us to click, you know. That 2 week break probably suited them. They had no pressure, and I do remember saying, I think if anything was to motivate this back to back Grand Slam, it was actually going to be England to really, you know, derail Ireland, and that's what they did, and they did their homework. And I remember the turnover in midfield, even though it was a penalty against England, Ellis Genge, I think it was Femi Rosova, he took him and he said, no, that, you know, that's not it. Sam Underhill backed that up as well, very calm, but they were like, that's not the game plan.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a turning point, because there was such clarity that we hadn't seen before on both sides of the ball from England. And look, I can't fault them. I just thought their speed of everything they did, it was so clinical, their running lines, and they just at times were not used to it. They tore Ireland apart. And as I said, every test game, you never know where you're at. And that was a different pressure for Ireland. That was more of a game management. It was, and it put their skill set and their game plan really under pressure. And we unfortunately had no plan B. And that just happens.
Yeah, they scored three tries. Not many teams come up against Ireland and score three tries. And as Lindsay said, they had some really clever interlinking play, which we hadn't seen from them up until this point. So how did they manage to stretch Ireland?
I think they actually, they played in attackingly a very similar way to how Ireland play. And with that, you know, Lindsay's already said their speed of ruck ball in terms of their, you know, ruck entry, all that. They were killing any kind of threat we had around the ball very quickly, and then little things kind of went against us, you know, obviously the Nash injury with the split, where you're going a 6-2 split to probably trying to negate the power of what England have, and then, you know, there's a foot and touch for one of the things, and the touch judge doesn't see it. That's fine, that's part of it. There's all these little things that just keep adding up, and those, they add up to a collective big thing in terms of a loss. But I think the for me, they decided to play. They backed themselves to play. Their shapes are really good off nine. You know, they very similar, kind of a three and a two in the middle of the park. But their aggressiveness in the carry, their footwork just before contact, little subtleties around, you've already mentioned Itoje. He's lined up to run a hard line there, and then he just controls his feet last minute and he's able to get the pass away. It's all that stuff that they've obviously been working on, felt it's been coming, and they've put it in fits and starts, but not collectively. Then the just the emotional drivers that they had had all week, but they were very, very good. And they just made a decision, we're going to go out, we're going to play. Where a lot of people thought, and a lot of people were talking about last week, that if they wanted to really kind of stay with Ireland, that they were going to have to maul, kick, power, just round the corner, kick the ball, build the pressure, accept what's coming back. Where they didn't. They met fire with fire and they went out to play. And that's what all the main guys like Furbank, he's doing it week in, week out with Northampton. You know, winger Mbosa, he's going out, he's playing week in, like Exeter. And they're being guided, all these younger guys are being guided by coaches that want to play. So Rob Baxter, you know, Sam Vesti in Northampton, all those Northampton lads, they play every week. They go out, they play, and they keep playing. You know, Mitchell at nine was excellent. Quinns, they play a really good brand of rugby.
Lawrence then and Slade in Lawrence the midfield. Slade,
you know, like
bad.
They were, you know, again, they just had really good balance across their play. And, you know, I suppose with the way the guys play in their club, you're pushing an open door there when you decide to go out and play, because they're used to doing it week in, week out.
Onto the 6-2 split. It had worked well for Ireland up until this point. Now, in hindsight, it's all well and good to say, oh, we should have gone for the 5-3. Will they reassess what they're doing with regards to the bench going forward now?
I think it'll change week in, week out. So I think it's easy to sit here and say the 6-2 split. It was a good decision, and it still will be a good decision. I mean, when Chesham went to the back row, and they brought in George Martin in the second row, who's an absolute, I thought he was exceptional, because he just brought again that extra power, and he was able to win gain line, and again he brought that aggression on the defensive side of the ball. So like, they were really, really clinical in even their decision making. England, they made three changes and you were kind of questioning, okay, we've only made one.
So should we have made the changes sooner?
No, I mean, you can't. I don't know what happened. Calvin Nash, he actually made a really good read. And it was just like he stopped and took the contact instead of driving through the contact. And then I thought, maybe you could give me your opinion on this. The scramble, I thought maybe Crowley should have committed earlier, because he had the sideline with Lawrence, and then he would have had his players coming over from the open side to help him in case he came back in. So it just, I suppose at times when we were put under such pressure so quickly, that's where our clarity actually just seemed to go out the window, which is very hard, because when things are just happening so quick a speed, and that's again where England put the pressure on us, it's very hard. You're really making split seconds decisions, and if your timing is off, which I felt it slightly was, I don't know why we were so, the ball just moved so quick and we hadn't got the numbers around, so we were just caught short. But back to Johnny's point, their work rate from England, even Itoje happened to stop his feet for that particular, for the Furbank try, but there was other times where I watched England and actually they had this one-off runner to kind of stop Ireland's defence, and that was something I haven't seen from the England over the last couple of years. Their work rate from their centres coming back for their kick receipt, how they ran their running lines, which is really actually a thankless job, but it's so efficient in just holding the defence and keeping Ireland narrow, because they got all their tries from, like, well, except for the Earls one, but you know, they were the Lawrence try and the Furbank try got us out wide, which we're not again used to, you know. As regards Nash, it's unfortunate, it's double unfortunate when Frawley goes back, because he wasn't too bad when he came on, but we have the players there. I think it's never going to happen. It was just,
were they a bit disjointed because they had to make that change early on?
I would think it just probably hit them a bit early, and they hadn't even settled into the game, so it's never easy to lose someone so quick. So, but again, it's a little blip. It shouldn't have impacted us. We started off well. I still think we could have maybe settled, maybe little decisions. But as I said, it's easy to sit here now, and I just think everything went for England and clicked. And unfortunately, we just had a really off day in everything that happened. Discipline, where we gave away penalties, trying to force the ball.
We had spoken about discipline in the build-up to the game. It has been an issue for Ireland at times in this competition as well. Is it something that we're seeing more of? Is it a continuous issue, do you think?
Well, it brought its head up again against England, and again it's just our decisions under pressure. We're not used to probably seeing it from Ireland. They're so disciplined on the defensive side of the ball, very like Leinster. They really trust in their defensive policy and systems. They make those double tackles and they wait until the right time to pounce. Josh Van der Fleer was the other man. I thought, actually, I couldn't remember. I was like, someone else stood out for me. I thought he was brilliant, and his decision making at when to go for the turnover was exceptional. But other times we kind of forced the ball. Tyburn had an unbelievable read on our 5 metre to the ball was out and he just stole it. But I think England would have scored if he hadn't made that decision. So it's a theme of the championship. It's being consistent, and it's something I think I can see us come out all guns blazing now against Scotland. This is going to be really skin hair flying, because I think we're coming in with two teams who have a point to prove and a lot of pride to salvage. But it's certainly a thing I think we need to eradicate for this weekend coming.
Another theme has been the line-out, and we've spoken about it again and again. Now, they won 11 out of 13 line-outs, but they were under pressure and they weren't winning them cleanly. Is this something that can be rectified, or is it an ongoing issue?
I think it is. But I think you have to credit England and then their selection. So you're playing Ozzie Chesham at six, which means three locks essentially. So their line out then, you know, they've three jumpers. And like, even when you're in a 5-man line out, all three guys, they're all in the line out. So, and they're quick enough and agile enough to move. And like, even for the last line out where it's a 5-man and it's the Darris joins, like, that was really tight. Like, they had nearly two pods up there, and they just held on to it. So like, they did put Ireland under a lot of competitive pressure. The return is okay, but probably not what they want. It was just the amount of jumpers and options they had. Now, Pete's obviously an excellent line out forward in terms of at six, so you just have to manage that and look at probably varying it up. But they still, it is something that they're continually working on. But, you know, the first two games, we were talking about how good it was, and that's the difference. So it's just the last two games, probably they've...
But maybe they weren't questioned under pressure with regards to the line-out in the first two games.
Yeah, I don't think they probably were. You know, France, they look at the size of the guys. They're probably not as agile as, Wales and England are. But, you know, I'd imagine that it's something that, you know, they will get right. And it's great for me. I think it puts probably pressure within selection there for guys, so concentrates the mind. And then a good thing is, you know, when Keller come off the bench, you know, he's been very, very good off the bench.
He's 100%. Well, 100%. He had 16 out.
He's been really, like, and he was rock solid again this weekend. And he got a lot of flack for the World Cup. So, like, he's, you know, that's, you know, we've two really, really good hookers there. But it is something that they're going to have to look at, and they're looking at, like I say, they're looking at a number of things this week in training.
But even defensively, like, we have to give England credit. Like, I was mind blown that, like, Jamie George gave a little front ball to Dan Cole, and they just decided. So that's, again, like, Ireland weren't even set. They're kind of waiting for this jumper to go up, and England just off script. Like, this is not something we've seen before from England. They did another little trick play, I think, just before that Tyburn turn on.
Yeah.
And
Ireland were very lucky off that, actually.
Very lucky.
Yeah, it was a great tackle.
And so they had a 1-3-1, but if memory serves me right. So what that happens is, they're waiting for this. You think this middle pod's going up, or there's a trick play or some movement. And next of all, they just skip the front lifter and in through this gap. Yeah. And I'm like, part of me was like applauding them, going, yes, England, didn't expect that. And the other part of me is like, wow, they're here to play. Yeah. And we just weren't ready. So I think we're under pressure on both sides of the ball, because England really tore up the Orthodox scripts and said, nah, you won't even know what we're bringing today. And look, I hate saying it, they are the old enemy. They have dismantled our historic chances of back-to-back Grand Slams, but they were well worthy of their win. Like, I mean, we could go through from here to the rest of the show, I think, bringing up exactly what they brought to the table at the weekend, and they should be very proud, because they've come in for a lot of slack, and I know you're just waiting for them to put this performance together, and hopefully they'll do it again against France, and it won't be just a flash in the pan.
Yeah, is this a turning point for English rugby now, and how do they back it up against France away from home?
Yeah, I think it has to be a turning point. Lindsay's already said it, like, it can't be a flash in the pan. They've set the standard of what's there. They've a younger side now. They can really catapult themselves into you know, into a force within the Six Nations. You know, France are struggling a bit. They clearly have a proper World Cup hangover. Even look at the dynamic of the bench when the camera panned to them. You know, over the, like Edwards and Galtier, they usually sit beside each other. They're at polar ends of the box this weekend. So like there is a, but you know, England need to back it up, and then people can start, you know, other than that, then, you know, they're obviously getting, you know, they are using, you know, how pundits and everyone has been speaking about them over the last number of weeks. But to, you know, to say that's wrong, they have to back up a performance and they have to go on a summer tour and they have to play well and do it consistently week in, week out. A lot of those players are doing it consistently, are doing it consistently week in, week out for their clubs. So, you know, I think you'll see another really, really good performance this week and from them. And I think that's a good thing. It's, you know, we need
the competition.
Yeah, we
this.
Need we need, you know, England firing. We need really good, you know, we need the English sides firing in Europe. It's good for the game. And I think, you know, this weekend, hopefully Netflix were given all access to both Italy and England, and we can really see what it was like. And hopefully they have a camera at halftime on Steve Bortwick and Andy Farrell and we'll finally find out what was said there.
Well, Rob Kearney was speaking as Virgin Media Television celebrates Mega March, their biggest month ever of live sport, with the Guinness Six Nations Championship, the Republic of Ireland International Friendlies, Cheltenham Festival and much more. And Enda had a chance to catch up with him yesterday to get his reaction to Ireland's defeat at the weekend and how that changes things for Ireland ahead of the visit of Scotland.
Disappointing, first and foremost, isn't it? Back-to-back Grand Slams are very hard to do. And this was a step towards a golden opportunity for one. You know, I think in the cold light of day, we didn't really perform on the day. Our pack got out-muscled by a very good England pack. Our discipline was poor, and that's not something you associate with this Irish team. And, you know, we didn't create too many opportunities. You know, you have to credit England as well. They were very good on the day. They had a good game plan in terms of how to get at Ireland. They didn't kick as much ball as we've seen from them before. They knew they had to score tries if they wanted to win. And, you know, the character that they showed to get back into the game and to win it with 90 seconds on the clock was very impressive.
Was it a little bit like the Wales game where Ireland just didn't really get going? They were still better than Wales, so they got over the line. Whereas this England side are obviously working a lot on their defence. They've obviously got a really good Irish coach within there. So, I mean, it seemed to be that Ireland just didn't get going in this game at all, and England just swallowed them up.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, I think in the Wales game, they didn't get going, but they always knew that they were the better team. And, you know, I think when you go in at halftime with a 14-point lead without having to do a huge amount, you know, there is sometimes a danger that you might think that it's a foregone conclusion. You just turn up for the second half and things will be okay. You know, I wouldn't say that was the case this time against England. You know, particularly you're away from home against England, it's always a hard game to win. So, you know, I don't think that there was an element of complacency from the team. They just didn't get out of the blocks. And as each minute goes on and England stay more and more in the game, their belief starts to grow tenfold. And, you know, it was one of those days where the opposition made it hard.
Is it one of those where it's almost like it's a different experience for the fans? Because I guess the fans' mindsets are always like, well, Ireland are dominating here, they're going to win the Grand Slam, England aren't really up to much, whereas the Irish mindset wouldn't have been that really. So what I'm trying to ask is, I guess, are the fans more shocked by this than what the players would be?
No, I think the players would be pretty shocked by it too, but they'll also be very realistic in terms of, if we don't turn up and if we don't play the standard of rugby that we're capable of, there's any team in the world on their given day that can beat us. You know, I think there has been definitely an air of complacency within the country over the last few weeks, you know, more from a supporter, press, media, that sort of cohort, as opposed to actually inside the team. But, you know, it's a lesson learned for everyone that, you know, one bad game and there's a lot of teams out there who can turn us over.
there's a few themes from the Six Nations. One, I guess, is the 6-2 split. Like, was it a mistake from Andy Farrell to go with a 6-2 split, or was that sort of he backed himself and that's what he does? But then you just get unlucky with the Nash injury. You know, things happen within a game that you can't legislate for. So was the 6-2 split in this occasion a mistake from Andy Farrell?
No, it wasn't a mistake, and it's never going to be a mistake, you know, because you only know the true benefit of your selection post-game, and every game is different. So, you know, Andy Farrell is going to do more 6-2 split again in his coaching tenure, and sometimes it works and other times it doesn't. And with the times it does work, everyone thinks it's great. And there's times that having six forwards on a bench can win you a game when they come on and bring a new level of physicality and energy and whatnot. So, listen, there's going to be times when your bench selection strategy does come under pressure. And when you lose, you know, one of your backs 5 minutes into the game, straight away you're on the back foot with it. So, you know, there's always arguments for and against it. And, you know, it's one of those perfect moments where hindsight's 20-20 after a game.
Another one has been Ireland's discipline. I mean, we have given away a whole heap of penalties, and it's been sort of in clunks as well. We've been giving away penalties, you know, five or six in a row in small periods within the game. We sort of got punished for that again at the end of the game. I know, you know, England didn't really need the penalty in the end, but they would have come back and they probably would have kicked the winning score anyway. So in terms of Ireland's discipline, did that come back to bite them in this game?
Yeah, it did. It was one of the main reasons that we lost the game. Our discipline was poor, and it's not something that we associate with this team. I think our disciplinary record is probably, if not the best in the world. We're very good in that department. We don't normally get yellow cards. But when the opposition puts you under pressure in a game, you're forced to make decisions, and you're forced to do things that you might not normally do if you're not under pressure. And we don't see this team under pressure that much, and that's what good opposition teams do to you, and that's the aim of the game, is to put the team you're playing against under as much pressure as you can and force them into bad decision makings, particularly around the breakdown. So, you know, there was penalties, and particularly in that last, you know, few phases of play, we gave them outs. And, you know, it's a hell of a lot easier attacking a team's goal line when you have penalty advantage, because you know you can be a little bit braver. You can throw that pass knowing that if it is knocked on or an intercept or something happens, that you do have that fallback of coming back to the penalty.
Was Conor Murray's decision to box kick the right one, do you think?
Oh, well, listen, these are one of the things in hindsight you can have loads of debate about it. There's three options. You hold on to the ball for 90 seconds and try and play out of your own half. Referees are hot in that area if they see you trying to kill the clock and you know, play down 90 seconds. They'll be looking for infringements at the breakdown, guys going off their feet, ceiling, anything. So, you know, I think the decision to kick was the right decision. Would it have been better to kick it 50 or 60 metres down the middle of the field, get a really strong kick chase and then get England to work out of their own half? It's a lot harder to score from 60 metres out than it is for 30 metres. But at the same time, you know, you give them a penalty on your 10-metre line, you'll still back your defensive strategy and capabilities enough to hold them out. And they ran a very good line out, got to the edge quickly, put us under pressure, and then a couple of poor decision-making defensive errors in that phase of play just allowed them to get closer and closer. And when you're 10 metres out, you know, you start making some silly mistakes and decisions that you might not normally.
Just looking ahead to next week then, it could have been wrapped up this week. It makes it a lot more difficult, a lot different of a proposition. What sort of mindset do you think Ireland will be going into this game now against Scotland? Because, I mean, there is a bit of bite between Ireland and Scotland anyway. So it really, it is heating up for the final game.
Yeah, it's a very different proposition, isn't it, if you're going for a Grand Slam. listen, there'll be a small seed of doubt in their heads after what England did to them last week, and Scotland are probably the one team you don't want coming to Dublin because they have no fear of playing against us. They will throw the kitchen sink at us, and Finn Russell will thrive in that environment where every play is almost a free play to them. But, you know, they'll... mood will be low in camp today. They'll review the game, they'll try and take their learnings, but I think deep down they'll still know that if they play to what they're capable of, they will win the game. And that's, you know, it's always a great position to be in as a team, knowing that, you know, you're better on the opposition on your day. You just have to bring that out.
And just finally on Scotland, like, you would have played against them several times. There seems to be sort of this feeling within the Scots, within the fans, and seems to be within the players as well, that Ireland are a little bit arrogant going into this fixture at times. Like, do you find that? Do you think Ireland are overconfident at times, or do you think maybe Scotland just haven't turned up on the occasion at times?
Yes, I think there's lots to unpack there in that. You know, we've beaten Scotland, I think, 10 out of the last 10 occasions. So, you know, we are a better team than Scotland. And I firmly believe that this weekend will be no different. If we play to what we're capable of playing, we will beat them. You know, but like you say, the Scottish sort of always feel that maybe they should be at our level a little bit more. And they can be, because they can play some very good rugby and they can attack really well, and their back line is very, very good. But, you know, in the cold light of day, if this team performs to what they're capable of and how they have been doing over the last few years, they'll beat Scotland.
Well, Lindsay, are we arrogant?
Well, is it when the stats speak for themselves? 9 out of 10 wins.
I know. We do have a great record against Scotland.
Yeah, and there's a lot of talk from them. I suppose they're so similar to ourselves, aren't they? We always love playing the Scots. There's always a bit of crack, but... yeah, it's funny. I find it offensive when people say Irish people are arrogant, because I don't think it's a tag we normally get. So we just seem to
enjoy. A lot of people thought we were very arrogant going into this weekend as well.
I think we're dreamers, aren't we? That's the difference. We are dreamers. And when we get close to something, we're like, oh my God, we're such a small nation. Like, we are well punching above our weight. So personally, I'll defend our nation, because I don't think it's arrogance. I think it's very much excitement and pride. And sometimes we actually don't know how to handle that. We're either one end of the spectrum,
yeah,
or the other,
know.
You know, don't mention the elephant in the room, or then we tend to dream over and beyond. So look, we've had an exceptional season. We're an exceptional team. We don't become a bad team overnight. I think it will add a little bit of pressure now, considering the Scots are calling us arrogant. So I think they will bring a lot of, they would have said it in their documentary. I know Stuart Hogg mentioned it, you know, we owe them one. They probably owe us a few now at this stage. So considering they started the upsets of the weekend against Italy, followed by our own against England, I think they'll come to Dublin with fairly something to prove and really want to pour on our celebrations for Patrick's weekend.
But they better not. We have loads of plans this weekend. I should mention that Johnny had to run off. He was just so upset after the defeat. He just couldn't take it anymore. He couldn't talk about it anymore. But looking ahead to the championship and what's there for the taking, here's how the table stands. Ireland are on 16 points. England are next on 12 points. France, Scotland are on 11 and can still technically win the championship. But the points difference probably makes it impossible. But a win or a draw will win it for Ireland. And if Ireland lose but get a bonus point, they'll win the championship, which wouldn't be ideal. We don't want that scenario.
No, and I think it would be a little bit catastrophic now at this stage to just be the team to bounce back after our World Cup heartache. It was always going to be a tough World Cup, you know, when everything had to align. We really did ourselves proud in the group stages, which we hadn't really performed before. So lots of positives to take out of it. Probably again, just a little slightly underperformed at times. But we didn't really underperform. It's just so small margins, and that's exactly what happened in the quarterfinal. So I think we need to regather. I think there'll be lots of reviews, lots of reassurance that, again, we just don't become a bad team. There's the pressure we a little bit faltered under. And any player, any athlete in any realm of the sporting world, it's happened. It's happened to individuals. It's happened to teams. And you just, it's about now the bounce back. It's about reminding this world how good this team is. Not for us, not for the fans. But if I was that player in that dressing room, and I've been there before, you collectively come together and make a decision as a team, because you've done yourselves individually and collectively injustice. It's nothing to do with anyone else. This is about this team, Andy Farrell, and everything they've gone through. So I would think they'd be very motivated to put things right for themselves, regardless of anything that's said outside that bubble.
Well, Andy Farrell was saying they've become very good at winning. Now they need to become very good at losing as well. And he was taking it all in his stride. And no doubt they'll be fully focused on this weekend. And it said that you learn more from your defeats than you do from the wins. So what will their main focus be, having looked at Scotland in the championship so far?
I think they're actually as indisciplined at times. They have been indisciplined. They're well able to, like, they lost their way against Italy, even though they were in probably a commanding position and should have won the game. And that's not to devalue or dilute Italy's win. They've been really exceptional through this championship. They've really lightened the place up after a dismal World Cup. So I think they can be petulant. They're unpredictable. But that's the thing about Scotland. They normally talk a good talk. And I mean this in the nicest way. They can back that up at times, but they're fairly inconsistent. So I think they will now see a wounded Ireland that will maybe be a little bit vulnerable. Try to put us under the same pressure. But I think if we can again just... We could probably see reverting back to a 5-3 split. I wouldn't see as much pressure on having a bigger pack or to match physicality. They're physical, they'll bring a fight, but I think we could probably go back to a 5-3. I wouldn't be surprised reverting back to that. And then it's just keeping Mr. Finn Russell right and make sure we don't make mistakes for Van der Merwe, who's the top try scorer, if I'm not mistaken, at this point. And giving him
he's on top. James Lowe is second.
Yeah. So I just think we still managed, even though we weren't really at the races on Saturday, I think we still showed glimpses of our class, like our two tries.
Yeah. What were the positives for you out of that game?
When we put our phases together, when we built phases, like, some of the passing under pressure was absolutely sublime, and it really just cut England open. And then the finishes by James Lowe. So the same thing, he was uncharacteristic in, say, England's first try in when we exited. Normally he'd kick, like, the longest kick of the match in 53 metres, if I'm not mistaken. So when we get that right and we push teams back away from our red zone or our 5 metre, then we're able to regather, recoup, set our defensive line again, and we know our policies and we have clarity, and we're able to get some breathing space to just calm. What's the next thing we have to do? Get ready for that, and we execute it. So execution at times let us down. It wasn't that we didn't create chances. There was just key moments where, unfortunately, execution let us down. Poor decision making, uncharacteristic clearance of kicks put us under pressure. And again, that might happen against lesser teams who don't, you're not kind of punished for that. But England decided that they were, and they, as I said, they punished us well. Like, they played very, very well at times.
So you don't think we did anything wrong tactically against England, that it was all down to execution?
I think we made some poor decisions under pressure. But I mean, that's all in the game. Not ideal, the changes we had to make. So I think, again, we're just going to have to strip it back. We have to get our line out right. We can't be giving away penalties at scrum time. We have to be absolutely clean as a whistle now in certain areas as regards our discipline. It's okay giving away a penalty in the other opposition's half. Not ideal, because you're obviously after gaining territory to get in there. But that's okay, because you're not under pressure then, vulnerable or susceptible to being scored against. So it's just getting back to the basics and the game plan that we've done. It did kind of get out the window. It was, at times we didn't know what we were doing, but at times we did put the phases together, which was few and far between. We still could have won that match. You know, there were still chances and moments we just didn't take.
What will we see team selection wise if Calvin Nash is out? We're not too sure about himself and Frawley. Will we see Jordan Larmour come in? Do you expect to see Gary Ringrose in the team?
Yeah, I definitely, because again, we've seen Ringrose on the wing, haven't we? So he's definitely an option to come back in. He was very unlucky not to be in. It's so weird, the selection now, to see Gary Ringrose, who would have been once he's fit, he was definitely in a team. Mm-hmm. You know, he's normally starting. So I think we would see him at the weekend. I think Jordan Larmour has absolutely earned his opportunity. So if there's a chance, I would like to see him come in, because he's been flying again for Leinster, and he's really... I mean, if he's given open ground, he has. And I think there's been change in him where he's still working, like he's pumping his legs, he's making sure he's not just flopping and he's getting a turnover, because he's so quick. Normally, this, your support for clearing rucks are so far behind. But look, I think though lads that we've mentioned there haven't gotten a lot of game time over the championship, I think there's still a huge calibre of player that can do a job if they come in against Scotland.
What about the pack? There have been a few calls for Peter O'Mahony to be dropped and Ryan Baird in. That would be very harsh for the captain to be dropped for the final game. Do you think Baird has earned his right to start, or will he keep changes to a minimum for this game?
I don't think we need to like panic now and just make, you know, I think Andy Farrell will go by whoever is performing in training on the back of the defeat. You would hope everyone's coming hungry to training with a point to prove, and that's where things can be fairly positive. And they seem a very good group who are very much, and you would hope that that's where they're galvanised, that, you know, when things are under pressure and it's a defeat, that they go off, lick the rooms, take some space, but they come back very positive with each other. But that there's a bite there, that they're pushing each other for that jersey. So I think it'd be very harsh on Peter O'Mahony to just be dropped. I don't think there was many standout performers that took the game to England, and it was just an off day for everybody. I could probably see him starting, but then depending on how things go, maybe Ryan Baird might get on a little bit sooner, because the thing with the yellow card as well, it was such a pivotal time of the game. It really, really killed us. If it had been just before, just after half time, perfect. But like within the last 20 minutes of a game, to have your captain gone for half of that, it just put us under so much pressure, added to the fatigue because you're working so much harder. And I then think just England kind of smelt a bit of blood there, and went even more so for us, you know. So no, I don't think there's any need to panic, and I don't see Andy Farrell doing that either. He's a very loyal man, he's a very pragmatic and rational man, so I don't see him just throwing his toys out of the pram and making a huge amount of changes.
Has there been an overreaction, do you think, maybe us included as well, to this loss?
Yeah, there's been a lot of chat, and I suppose myself, I thought I did see kind of a 10-15 point win, but not an easy win. Like, I was very clear on that, because I thought in that third and fourth quarter, if we could really grind England down, then our bench would come off fresh legged, as they have done, and really put the game to bed and open teams up. It didn't plan out that way. Losses are fantastic. I've had more losses than I've had wins, and it's been a steep learning curve, and I think they do reveal the character beneath. They do reveal maybe flaws that you may not have seen against lesser teams. And I think if the homework is done this week with what is our Achilles heel, where might Scotland look to punish us, I think then they'll just shut up shop and make sure that they're just keyed in to exactly what the game plan is, and refocus on the clarity of execution, our policy, and what the game plan is for this opposition.
Producer Enda has just said that there's been an underreaction. He doesn't think we're harsh enough.
Jesus, and for a Donegal man, just because they're coming out of Division 2 winners, huh? Look, I don't think you can't. It's very harsh. Like, there'd be a huge expectation, and at the end of the day, there are players, there's game plans, the things that go are absolutely out of your control on the day. And unfortunately, no player in a green jersey has a magic wand, nor does Andy Farrell to control those things. So, geez, Enda's harsh anyway. We send him into camp. But look, it's not ideal. I'm still angry, and you're kind of thinking back. That game was in a 2 minute winning mark. You know, we were 2 minutes from a win. That's how close we were, even though we didn't deserve it. But yeah, we're not infallible. It's kind of the quarterfinal all over again. And
that's it. Are there a lot of parallels?
Yeah, I think we need to learn how to win dirty, to win under pressure, to perform under pressure. Performance isn't that you're cutting teams open with this absolutely magic line break. Performance is that you're winning the collision, you're winning the battles, you're winning the gain line, you're looking after your ruck, you're winning your set piece, and you're not giving away 10 plus penalties. You cannot be in double figures for penalties. You cannot be in double figures for missed tackles. So those things are not about skill. Those things are about just bringing the fight. And when the pressure gets tough, we have to be able to just win those very, very fine margins. And if that's play by play by play, it's a very long 80 minutes when it's a performance like that. But that's what has to be done if we want to be world champions. You know?
And the championship is still there for the taking this weekend. And that can't be sniffed at either.
No, because, you know, look, Grand Slams are few and far between winning, but also championships and what revenue it will bring. And there's a whole bigger picture with that. And I said to you down in Kilkenny a couple of weeks ago, you see all these young people, both boys and girls, out playing rugby. And it is key. Johnny said it before he left. It is key to the sport. Those upsets, it keeps it exciting. both for the supporters and for the players.
As a neutral, it was a brilliant weekend.
It was a brilliant test match. It was a brilliant weekend of rugby, and hopefully there's more shocks this weekend, but just not in the Aviva.
Final word. So, Lindsay, there's a lot of niggle between Scotland and Ireland. How do you see it playing out this weekend?
Paddy's weekend. Listen, fighting Irish, I think we'll bounce back. That's what I hope to see, is that just the pride and the passion, the weekend that's in it, the final game to cement our championship, to know all that's in stake, and to finally have to put it to Scotland again that we are the superior team, and to show it and put in an 80-minute performance and get the win. I think Scotland will come with a lot of energy, a lot of hope. But yeah, I see the men in green coming out on the right side.
Well, we'll leave it there for today's show. My thanks to Lindsay and to Johnny. We have a mountain of coverage coming your way this week ahead of the final weekend of the Six Nations. We'll be at the press conferences. Pat McCarry will be chatting to Mac Hansen, and we'll be reviewing all the action on next week's show. Until then, from all of us here, Slán go fóill.
Sports Show presents House of Rugby.